Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the March 7th, 2016 Finance and Facility Committee meeting. We are kicking off at 5:30, a nice early time that I know Mr. Escalante is very pleased about. But we'll start off with any public comment. Mr. Cooper, anything for tonight?
No.
No? Okay. We're going to have a slight change to the agenda. The tech budget will go in place of the staffing preview. Lori is swamped, and she's just trying to get everything done. But she'll be down tonight. She definitely will be here tonight, but it'll just be a different order.
So what's the first thing?
The first thing will still be summer capital projects, and then we'll go tech budget.
Can we do transportation first, because Kurt's not here, and that's kind
of... I'm good.
And then...
We'll just move this bad boy all over the place. I like it. So let's start with Becky.
It's real simple. We opened the cooperative that District 41 belongs to for regular transportation. Went out to bid for regular transportation services. We opened the bids last week. You saw the bid results in the memorandum that's in your packet. And we're still analyzing the results of that. And we continue to meet with people. So... that's all we have at this point in time.
Questions?
Is this a Septran?
We did Septran, the special ed transportation also, and we opened those bids and we continue to talk. It's just that I didn't have enough results to even share with the board yet. So
those will definitely come at the next finance committee meeting. We've got a lot of work with the regular transportation bid.
Yeah. With both of them, to be honest.
Yeah.
Okay. We just had a couple incidents with that bus, right?
With the Septran?
Yeah.
But just
is that anywhere in the financial contracts of repercussions or anything like that, or is that...
On Septran, just a performance clause. Do we have a...
That's all part of our conversation. The business managers and the attorney are going to meet with Septran on Thursday afternoon and really drill them as to service and how that needs to improve, or they may only have a one-year contract.
We got that. They're the only...
They were.
They were the only company that bid in-district transportation. There was another company that bid out-of-district, so we'll meet with both those companies on Thursday afternoon. It's just way too
painful
at this point.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was disappointing that we only had one main bidding company for special education services in district.
And just so everybody knows, since we're in a public meeting, overall, the bids on the transportation came back. We had a contract that was 2 years that was extended for the contract. We had very favorable rates with Central because they were trying to move into the marketplace. They went out to bid for the first student in Illinois Central. The first student seems to be lower the bids.
Appears to be.
With Glen Allen 89 for theirs, it's not relative to Illinois Central. And this is a question, they're still thinking of being in.
No, they are going to stay with Illinois Central.
They're going to stay with Illinois Central.
That decision has been made.
Okay, so that's been made. And then overall, from a standpoint of what we should expect based on these raw numbers, we should expect increase in our transportation costs.
If the numbers in that column for first student hold, right, we should see a 5% increase the first year, a 3% half for the second year, and 5% for the third year.
Okay. I just want to make sure that's all
right. Yeah, no, that's good. Okay. So, yeah, there are some decisions that need to be made with that, and Becky will be meeting with her fellow CSBOs in the coming week and then weeks with a regular transportation as well.
Okay.
You good?
Good, Dave.
All right, Dave, you're up.
Okay, also included in your packet of information here are several projects that we also have gone out to bid, and the results of the partial list are attached to these summer capital projects. There are some variations in pricing. Some came in higher, some came in lower. The two that pretty much stand out the most are the Churchill Playground work that we did there, but part of that is really due to increase the scope of work where we had them bid an alternate for poured in place rubber for the entire surface of the playground, so that brought that project cost up. And the second increase is in the Forest Glen Ben Franklin locker replacement with cubbies. The pricing, after doing some more investigation after the bids, the increase from the number that they gave us originally was due to disposal, demo cost, and then additional wood blocking that's required behind the metal lockers that are there to accept the new cubbies.
So overall, there were several bids that were below, below the fire panels and then the ADA playground equipment at Ben Franklin.
Correct.
Okay. So there were some cost savings from what you originally budgeted there.
Right.
On the Churchill, all the difference of the bid, which is quite substantial, roughly whatever it is, $60,000 or less than that, is not just the alternate, though.
No.
And also the fact that the...
We're reinstalling existing equipment that was removed for the construction project that's been laying on site there. So it's really tough because with phase two construction, the contractor is putting in the concrete curb for that new playground site, doing some base work, and then this company has to pick it up from there, install the old stuff, get it up to the stone base, and then the alternates that we asked for the poured in place rubber.
And then the PIP.
The PIP, yeah.
So the PIP, what are the benefits of PIP? Because I know with mulch, you're always, I have it in my backyard. I'm always replacing it.
Every year we do, yeah. I mean, that playground there probably, well, we usually use about 100 yards of wood chips per playground, and it's usually between $25 and $30 a yard for the installation of that. So we do that annually at the playgrounds. As it degrades, the mulch turns into mud pretty much. So kids are playing in that. So really, the poured in place is much more friendly for wheelchair accessibility. The kids will have a whole extra 45 by 165 foot area to use in inclement weather, where they won't have to go out into the grass area, because they'll have that, if the board approves it, the poured in place rubber surface, the asphalt playground, and then there is another wood chip area there, so more kids can be on that entire play surface and have the mobility there. But it's just very, very accessible with wheelchairs and a cleaner area for the kids.
And during the winter, do we remove the snow?
We do. On the asphalt playground area, we do remove that in. You probably would need a Kubota to clean it off the poured in place rubber, but no.
I got that.
We could
a nice big pearl.
With the old egg beater with the rubber paddles, if we set it up probably just a little, we probably could clear that without damaging that.
But in the area where the playground equipment is, you don't clear that because of playground equipment.
Yeah, you really wouldn't be able to.
Because you don't want the motor handlers, but they got close, but you don't want them necessarily on the equipment.
Correct. I mean, it's just the playgrounds are open. It just gives you a little bit more usage area during the seasons, because that area behind Churchill, there's always kids will find the dirt areas no matter what you do. So. Just helps when the kids come back into school too. There's less stuff drug back in.
That I understand.
From a life cycle standpoint, it's actually cost less to do the poured in place surface over time. Upfront cost is substantial, but if you looked at it over an 18 to 20 year payback, it's cost effective to do the poured in place.
No, but I was just going back to our machine here, Dave. So I think that was the only one, right, that went over?
No, the other one is the...
$40,000.
The cubby, the locker replacement.
Yeah,
the
cubbies. But, I mean, that's everything that we're doing, right?
Two more projects. The Churchill asphalt work, three, actually. The Ben Franklin bathroom, and then the Hadley roofing. They're out to bid actually for the two projects at Churchill and Franklin, and Hadley's roof will be going out very soon.
Are we still comfortable with these numbers?
I think so. The roofing, I think, will be right at the 75 or less, And the unknown is, you know, the bathroom project and paving. But there are some allowances that we have in the Churchill project that will be coming back for us for partial asphalt work, as well as some playground stuff that they won't be doing as part of phase two, because we're the other contractor is going to pick it up. So we should see some savings in both those areas.
And I guess they have, on the asphalt work, have you done any, has any testing been done?
We did before we even, that was the first thing we did about a month ago. We did soil borings, and then we sent that off. And that's where we did find some suspect areas where, I think when the park district and school district did that project, some of the bases, it's only 6 inches and 2 inches of asphalt they found. So I'm not sure which
part. And we're going to have buses on?
And that's why that area is really, I mean, there is construction, you know.
That's not a heavy duty thing.
No. Yeah, so this is again designed with, yeah, correct. We're going to, in the bid, there's also an area for where they pick up the trash. That's going to be a concrete buffer, and we need to do some ADA upgrades to that parking area as well. So.
Okay. So you said one more interesting thing for me. Do you know how much money is in the Churchill budget for the Churchill
asphalt?
Not the asphalt, specifically for the playground.
That we're working on that with the contractor because it was for the mulch. So depending on how many yards, he didn't have it broken out in his bid package, but. We will get a savings for the mulch that he doesn't have to do.
Are we going to get a why them, not us conversation going on between the schools?
No, I think as part of the... you mean as far as the
Port in Place?
We are at Ben Franklin. We're doing the addition of the Port in Place rubber for their ADA accessible area, so we're adding on to that, putting the swings in and some play panels. Ben Churchill also will have ADA swings and play panels as well in the Port in Place rubber area. Then now as we move forward and we replace playgrounds, there's already some that's at Forest Glen. The only place that doesn't have the PIP is over at Lincoln, but that's pretty much our oldest playground area.
So do we need to bump up these 3-year, 4-year estimates? Because I see Forest Glen playground equipment in 2018 at 175, Lincoln at 175 in 2018, do we need to bump those numbers up?
I think that'll probably be because those are. I think we'll probably be pretty close to that, depending on what. Because this really is directed towards oil costs too for the asphalt, because it's shred up rubber tires that they use with an epoxy. So depending on how that pricing is, I think, but it should be pretty close to that though.
Kind of political hot button right now, isn't it?
I'm not touching that one.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Got the rubber.
Oh, that?
Yeah. Okay.
All right. I thought you were talking about oil cars.
Oh, no.
You were talking about
that. So we're okay with the 175 and
I think so, because I think there's some.
Those aren't. Becky.
It keeps right. Coming back.
Those aren't.
Patrick has it laminated in his wallet.
Those are working documents. But
that exact
I'll come back every year.
That's why we have it.
It should be pretty close to that.
Okay.
Comments? Any discussion on that? I mean, the big difference is the labor costs.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, for the, what is the total? The total difference is 22,000, less than that. 21 change.
Right.
The difference. But there is, from a, you had explained this before, there's a maintenance difference between having these two.
Correct. There's pretty much no maintenance with them. They're safer for the kids. They're not slamming fingers or bumping heads, and you know, just the noise alone of constant open and closing and up in the main corridors there.
Okay.
That difference is labor cost.
Yeah, for the removal of the metal, the haul them away, and then they're not quite sure what kind of wood blocking is behind it to receive the new wooden cubbies. So
that could go up.
This is the cost for it. So,
but when they initially bid it, they were that. And remember, the bids were just for us. For
for discussion purposes.
Mm-hmm.
I think the key thing for me is that Covey seemed to be well received at the other schools.
Yeah, they're working out really well. So.
And the maintenance of them is a lot easier. I can't attest to the sound, but I mean, if you're long term maintenance is better, you're going to have savings there. And if you don't have to repair them from that standpoint either or paint them again, then you have the savings. I wish the bidding on the front end would have been a little more tight.
Yeah.
You know, it's laid out when you present them, so.
And Dave did express to the individual our disappointment and not including. He knew he was working with a school district who needed to follow.
Yeah, we met twice and once was with the installer. So.
Yeah.
But overall, that you have savings in two other areas that that exceed that. It's really the playground.
Just the right.
That is the one that is the outlier in this whole list.
Yep.
So.
And that's why we wanted to come back here again with it.
Right. Hopefully you have the credit. Even if the credit's only $8,000, I don't know how much more.
It's going to, because they didn't have unit pricing for it, and because in the original we weren't planning on.
Mm-hmm. But it'd be good to know when you present it tonight, don't you?
Yeah, that's okay.
Unless they text you in the next 30 million, the next
month.
Okay. So you may want to report back to us and just let us know what that.
Yeah, once I get a firm number back from FPC, I can do that.
Okay.
Have we worked with that contractor before? The one that you didn't. Those costs?
Yes, actually, yes. They did. That's, they did Lincoln, all those copies there for that project. So.
Okay, any other questions on those capital projects that we'll move forward for action tonight? All right.
One other agenda.
Okay.
The minutes?
Just yep. Thank you.
I was going to get the minutes.
Thank you. We're all over the place.
I know we were mixing it up and kind of letting it go. All right.
Review and approval of minutes?
Good.
Patrick?
Yep.
Good.
Right. So
thanks for they're keeping me on track today. Thank you.
Oh, it just during the board meeting, I think it's important. You might have wrote this, but when you gave us the tabulation sheet of the bids, E. Hoffman was, they didn't.
Oh, correct. Yeah.
I would just make sure I explain that to the group one because it's so much lower.
Yeah.
I mean, when you see it, it's so much lower, and if they did, their bid wasn't qualified, then we just need to make sure that.
Good advice.
Okay.
All right.
That leaves us with
If we're good with projects, cap projects, then let's go to Mike on the technology budget.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about the projects that we have planned for this summer.
Can I ask you one question? Only because I went through what we got on our board book. Was there a major, what was the shift, or what was the change, I should say, in the two?
Yeah, what I did is I added this as an option.
Okay, so that's the only change, is that?
Yeah, that was
box.
It.
Okay.
Because when Kurt had commented that the previous presentation, he wanted to know if there were other options rather than a one-to-one at first and K. So I came up with two different options that we can look at, depending on if cost is the issue or just the devices. But I'm going to begin with the equipment that's coming off lease. So we've got four fairly substantial leases coming due at the end of the year. Smart boards, about 72 smart boards. Total is $23,130 annually that we paid for that. 160 desktops are coming off. That was $41,179,000. And then the biggest one were the iPads. We had 270 iPads and then 1,800 laptops. And those are the laptops that have been used at the grade schools for the past few years, as well as the ones that we piloted for the teachers at Franklin and at Hadley. And then our first group of Chromebooks is going to be coming off lease as well. So that's 430 Chromebooks. And total is $53,205 for that lease. So the total amount of leases expiring, $537,745. So those are all coming off the books this year. And now when we're looking at refreshing the majority of that equipment. I presented three different proposals because there was an interest in other options. If we did not have a full one-to-one, what would some of our options be? And the first one up in the top left here, that shows if we did do a one-to-one, pretty much K through fifth grade, and that would include 10 Chromebooks at kindergarten and first grade, and then 10 iPads. So they'd have a blend, which was something teachers showed an interest in. For the Chromebooks, we'd be looking at 2,500 Chromebooks plus the accompanying licensing for Google for Chrome. The total for the Chromebooks would be $615,625, and that's the aggregate amount. That's for the entire purchase, as well as refreshing our teachers' workstations. So a lot of those desktops are coming off lease. We also have some pretty old desktops that are still out in the field. So we're looking at replacing just for the teachers and administrators and giving them laptops instead of desktops. And $716 is the unit price for those laptops, and then $250,600 would be the total cost for the laptops. We'd also get a docking station, which is something that the laptop plugs into, just like we've got here, and that you can get access to all of the AV equipment and the peripherals. So then there's also the iPad. So rather than refreshing the 270 that are coming off lease, the 130 that I'm recommending would be mainly a kindergarten, first grade, and maybe a small collection in the libraries, as well as combining that with some of the equipment we already have. We still have some iPads in district. And then the final option here would be replacing the desktops. We've got about 35 that are in the Applied Tech Lab at Hadley in the lower level. Those are coming due for refresh. Those are about 6-7 years old. And I figured as long as we were going to do those and we were going to invest in desktops, we may as well look at some of the office staff. So secretaries, anybody in the office, the nurses, custodians, positions like that where it's been a while since we refreshed those desktops. And this will give us a little economy of scale. So the desktops would be $652. We wouldn't replace the monitors. We'll use the existing monitors that are already in the district. So the total for that would be $78,240. So the most current lease option I had gotten from our leasing agent with American Capital would be to bundle the top portion. Those would all be three-year leases on a fair market value. And then I'd also do a dollar buyout for the desktops, but that we would extend to 5 years. We'd expect those to last longer. So our total purchase for that, and this includes all the equipment, both on the 3- and 5-year lease, would be $354,122. And that would essentially replace everything that needs to be replaced from the leases that are coming off, plus providing us even more equipment than we currently have. So the other option, if we weren't to do a one-to-one at kindergarten and first grade, would be we just eliminate the iPads. That's about $74,000, and we wouldn't replace those. We just stick with the Chromebook numbers, the HP laptops, and the desktops, and just not do the iPads. And so we still have a one-to-one from second grade through fifth, but at kindergarten and first grade, it'd be 10 laptops, or 10 Chromebooks, rather, per section.
So you're looking at roughly $11,000 savings?
In difference. Well, actually, total lease would be $330,122. So it's a little bit more than that. It's about $24,000 annually that we would pay for the iPads.
I was just comparing the $354,122 to the $343,171.
Right, and that's the third option, and that would be to say, okay, yeah, we didn't do the iPads. Let's say we just did Chromebooks instead. And so instead of getting 130 iPads, because the iPads are more expensive, we would do Chromebooks just across the board instead of tablets. So there would be a savings in that as well, $343,171 would be our annual cost for that.
Why is it $74,000 in savings?
Well, that's over the that's the entire.
It's not
I got you. So the 330 is your iPad.
Right. So the 330 would be no iPads, we just eliminate that device. And the 343 would be, is if we kept the device, but we replaced the iPad with a Chromebook instead. Yeah, I'm sorry, that's the one I kind of added earlier today.
All Chromebooks.
Right. So that's why I wanted to present a couple of options. And
Mike, are these equipment leases, is this your 866 in your 6,000 in your 2015-16 budget?
Yes. So I've got that on the next slide here. And this is the lease schedule. So this is the total, and I show you the ones coming off lease 15-16. And then rolling in. So you're talking about just the budget number?
Yeah.
Correct. 866.71. So that would go down to 735 for all of our leases. And this kind of covers a lot of what I already talked about as far as what's coming off lease, the dollar amounts associated with that. And then you can also see the total. We've got two different categories. Top category is the five-year leases. And those are generally dollar buyout leases where it's equipment we intend to keep. So things like the smart boards, we intend to keep those. We're not going to refresh those this year. So we pay the dollar out, and the equipment is ours. The ones at the bottom are the three-year leases. That's the majority of the leases that we do, as well as the equipment that's associated with that lease. So, and again, you can see the two big ones coming off this year, and those are mainly iPads and laptops.
Hey, Mike.
Yes.
I was looking through this yesterday, and if I missed anything, I read a lot of stuff to read. But I know last time we talked about the iPads at Hadley. Was there ever a response for that, or was there?
We're not going to replace them.
We're not. Okay. No.
Yeah, that's part of the 270 iPads coming off lease this year. And what I recommended was replacing that with 130 iPads, but then more Chromebooks with the grade school. But that did not include the Hadley library.
Okay. Thank you.
So, are you ready for questions then?
If I could just cover one quick thing.
Sorry, Mike, I'm coming in late, so I didn't interrupt you.
So I did try to project out some of the projects that I would anticipate over the next couple of years. This year would kind of be our last big rollout for classroom devices, personal devices, desktops, laptops, Chromebooks. We have a couple of years where we're really not going to make big investments in those devices. So we're going to turn our attention to our back end, our infrastructure, our server environment, our voice over IP system. Copiers are going to be due for refresh next year. So I kind of broke out at least some estimated costs as placeholders for those projects that I would see coming due. But the main thing is going to be redesigning our server network and then building in additional redundancy for the systems that we plan to continue to host in-house here. And questions?
Good.
I mean, that's $74,000 for those iPads for kindergartners and first graders. I mean, is that we're getting $11,000 a year worth of educational value with those?
I think that's a piece. Again, Mike and Karen reached out to our teachers. Board asked, you know, what are K-1 teachers doing with those pieces? And again, they continue to feel like that iPad, it's an important piece, but I think that's a piece where the board, they want to do, you know, have the Chromebooks, have those pieces as opposed to the iPads. For the littler kids, sometimes that iPad's an easier tool to manipulate.
It's a little bit more tactile. It's a little easier to use. They don't have to log into them, so there are some benefits to having the tablet versus the laptop or the Chromebook. But since Kurt and Stephanie came in a little late, do you mind if I...
I think that'd be good.
Well, can I ask a question on that real quick, though? And then the question I have, though, leading to that is, the alternatives you provided to us are either Chromebook and iPad, one-to-one, whatever, 10 each in each classroom, or no iPads, or all Chromebooks.
Right.
And the question comes, because what you just said leads me to think... First, I was thinking, why don't you get five of each? And now I'm thinking, why aren't you just getting iPads?
Well, I think not every teacher was as crazy about the iPads, about using those. Some of them had specifically asked for Chromebooks. There was kind of a blend. So some still wanted the iPads. However, they still wanted Chromebooks, too. So there seemed to be more of a preference from the teachers towards the Chromebooks rather than the iPads.
Okay, but that's in contradiction to the iPads being logged in and tactile and all that.
But they're also a little bit more difficult for us to manage. So it's not as quick and easy for us to be able to update things like apps or software. Where the Chromebooks we can. We can do that right from here in the moment, and we can push those out very, very quickly and efficiently. With the iPads, we just don't really have that kind of functionality.
Okay. Well, see,
is it individual with the iPads?
It becomes more of an individual. We tried a couple of the managed device systems. They didn't quite work out exactly the way we had hoped. Certainly didn't seem to build any efficiencies in, whether it was on our part or on the teacher's part. So we've kind of gone more to a one-to-one, dealing with the Chromebooks on a one-to-one basis rather than pushing it all out from a single source like a remote management client. So they're a little bit more cumbersome.
The iPads.
To manage, right.
So, because I think if they're not using, it seems hard to believe that, and Kurt, this is, I think, what you stated the last time we were listening to tech. It's hard to believe that you have all these kindergartners with one-to-one technology at any point in time in their class. Maybe I'm wrong, but it's hard to envision. So then you want to put the right technology in front of them for the teachers and what you can manage. What I'm hearing is, it sounds like, yes, we like the iPads, but the Chromebooks are easier to manage and seems like the better
more efficient,
fit.
Right, and they can provide greater access. The one time that I know we see kindergarten and first grade all in a one-to-one environment is when we're doing math tests.
Right.
Or any
kind they're using the Chromebook for
any kind of assessment.
Yeah.
And the Chromebook really is a more efficient device for that.
And they don't necessarily have to be one-to-one for that because we can just stagger how they
Right.
Take.
What they do right now is they share. So they may have to shuffle a cart in to a kindergarten room or first grade room so they can get that one-to-one. So we could continue that process, but that's what we've been doing for the last 8 to 10 years.
And it's not broke?
No, it doesn't seem to be broke.
Okay.
You want to show, just do a quick review of the three options?
The first option up in the top left here is if we did one-to-one with iPads and Chromebooks, maybe 2,500 Chromebooks and 130 iPads. The option below is if we just eliminated the iPad and just had all Chromebooks. So we'd have 10 Chromebooks at kindergarten and first grade per section. And then the third option would be is if we just did all Chromebooks and didn't do the iPad. So instead of getting 130 iPads, we'd get 130 Chromebooks to kind of flesh out at kindergarten and first grade. Ideally, to be able to provide 20 devices per section.
Okay, what's the difference between the second option and the third option?
Second option is that we just got rid of the iPads, we eliminated that extra 130 devices. And then with that, we can take the remaining iPads, put those in the libraries as we have now, and they can be available for checkout. Because we will still have
So that's an important fact. So you're going to have how many iPads you're going to have in the school if a kindergarten teacher thinks that's the appropriate tool to help assist in their learning, then they can check these out.
Correct.
Do we have iPads in the LMCs right now? Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Are they checked? Have we checked the rate in which they're two checks, but checked out?
They're kind of checked out onesies, twosies. I mean, they're mainly for projects that they're doing video or pictures, that sort of thing. So I can check to see if they have exact numbers.
Here's what I would like, because to me, it seems like there's enough kindergarten teachers who want to use them, and I understand having an iPad for a young child. Mm-hmm. And if they're not being used at an alarming rate, the ones we have, and you're going to add more, it appears to me that the teachers will have this available.
Enough available.
Enough time to hopefully suit their needs. Because I just don't see the Chromebooks, you know, being one-to-one at the kindergarten level. And okay. There's no evidence convincing us of that. And the savings is supposed to be...
And that's why I wanted to bring you the other options.
That's just mine. You know?
Okay.
I think then, you know, the progression in my mind is, okay, we went there, now move up. At first grade. What's the feedback from first grade? Do we need to be one-to-one at first grade? Do they use iPads still at first grade? You know, I don't think we stop. We just keep moving up. Mm-hmm. When we stop, we'll get to sixth grade.
Yeah.
We pilot, we've heard positive mm-hmm. feedback there. But to me, kind of still in level one.
Level one.
You know, what is it at first grade? What's the feedback? Are we at the same thing? Should we be at, you know, one device for every two students? I'm asking. I don't know the answer, but... To me, that's a logical next question.
And that's what we're asking, too, because Karen has been working with the digital literacy specialists at each building to ask the kindergarten first grade teachers, well, what do you use them for? What's the need for them? And we're compiling that information, and we should have that for you for the discussion.
And Karen's out. She's been battling a nasty cold, and tonight it just kind of... It took her down for the count. So, yeah, so she's not here tonight.
Well, I mean, you can see it. You can kind of... You can take that information and see mm-hmm. there being savings.
Oh, absolutely.
So, yeah. So I guess it's double, right? Because right now, since we have half-day kindergarten, we need as half as many Chromebooks. So it's actually two times the savings at first grade level. But I think you need the teacher's feedback to see the utilization of the tool.
Well, and it sounds like, I mean, I think you've been trying to get some feedback and, you know, some of how I look at some of this is if I was asked, if I was a kindergarten teacher, I'd say, hey, you know, give me 25 devices, you know, that'd be great, right? But maybe, I mean, you know, they're not going to worry about whether they're using them every day or anything. So for me, I'm kind of in the K-2 spectrum with 10 Chromebooks in each classroom and eliminating the iPads at those levels. I just don't see even at second grade. That's just my opinion, but as you go up, you know, but... When we really band things together in education, a lot of times it's K-2 that we band them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so that's where I'm kind of at with it is, and they can easily shift those. You know, you guys have plenty there. They can shift those if they need, you know, for testing, or if somebody is doing a lesson where they need those for the day. The teachers know in advance what they're doing. They can move 10 or 12 iPad or Chromebooks from another classroom that's across the hall. So I guess for me, I'd like to maybe, and I don't know if you did this number, you don't have to do it right now, but if you could give me a number, K-2 at 10 Chromebooks per classroom without any iPads.
Sure.
You can figure that out pretty easy from the data he just presented. You can extrapolate it out.
Well, then you did too.
Yeah, Kurt, I have to say, it's right in front of you. It's pretty easy. But here's the thing. The one thing, Kurt, though, maybe you didn't hear this when you got in, but he did get feedback from the kindergarten teachers, and it was taken into account. What do we really need? Mm-hmm. It was looking introspective.
Well, I know they got it. I know they got it.
But they didn't
That's
say.
What I just said.
No.
But go ahead.
What you said is that they would just, if you were there, you just ask for everything. And because if you have it, it's nice to have. It's like having that extra tool in your toolbox. Just that one day you need it, you got it for Father's Day, it's great to have. But in this case, the feedback was not that. It was looking introspectively and saying, hey, you know, if we needed to pull back because the board said, hey, let's save some money, this is what we would do. And it was, you know, eliminate the iPads in essence. So to me, I think you got true, you know, looking inwardly and say...
I didn't say the teacher said that. I said that's how I would do it.
Did I say the teacher?
I said if I was a teacher, that's how I would do it.
And I did agree with you. They specifically asked for chronological
I inferred it. I mean, you may not have implied it, but I inferred it, so...
Well, you can infer whatever you want, but I didn't
say,
that's fine.
I didn't say you said it.
Look, I'm at K through 2.
Understood.
And 10 chronicles. That's right.
That's 10 per section.
Yep.
K through.
Yep. And Mike, I can certainly, I don't, you know, figure
I'll
it out.
I'll get it for you tomorrow.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
So you will get us the feedback from the first grade teachers.
Yeah, kindergarten to first grade, it's more narrative form rather than the survey that we did previous. But I think I shared the survey results with everybody that I had done with K-1. So, yes, we'll definitely get you that other feedback and input.
And I actually, Mike, I appreciate that you did go out. I mean, I know that you went out and asked for it because you're trying to figure out what they want. I mean, that's a tough thing to do, and it's a moving target because you're trying to figure out what every teacher in the district's thinking.
And everybody's got a little bit of different style in the classroom and how they approach it. So, any other questions about these three or input? I'll definitely get that.
But it sounds like that number you're going to get is going to be between 330 and 340.
Somewhere.
I think the one question I have is not to repeat what Kurt said, but. And I don't know that this is, I don't know if it's more directive that, like, kids on the board, if we're going to be one-to-one technology, or if we feel that we really need to be one-to-one technology in all the grades. Like, I don't really know where that falls. I'm not saying that you're the one pushing that we have to have one-to-one technology. Like, I do think that, you know, I've kind of tried to, like, talk around other districts. I friends that work in other districts that actually are in technology, and they seem to think, like, the younger grades, two and younger, that 2-to-1 is actually sufficient. You don't really need 1-to-1. And I don't know necessarily what's driving it for us, but I feel like we should really be looking at it, especially after seeing some of the survey comments from the parents. I know parents, there was some feedback, quite a bit of feedback, that parents were afraid that we're sitting our kids in front of computers too much during the day to begin with, which would make me wonder, do we really need to expand technology, especially to those younger grades, 1-to-1? And I know we piloted the Chromebooks, but that was really more just piloting Chromebooks, not 1-to-1 technology, since those are grades that already had 1-to-1. Mm-hmm. So if we truly think that, like, second and third grade, because I guess second and third don't have 1-to-1 right now.
No, they don't.
If we think they need 1-to-1, should we maybe pilot that first? I guess I don't know where the history is to determine that that's really necessary. And I don't know that it even comes from you, Mike. But I think those are more my questions, and maybe that's more a board discussion than Mike. Because I want to take into account the input from the teachers, but at the same time, I think we need, you know, I would like to know, you know, what do you intend to use it for? Like, how many hours of the day are you actually using the technology? I think those are things we should truly find out, because it is, you know, it is a big expense that we're looking at. So I think I would just like more information in those regards. I think those are all the questions I have.
So, Mike, on the 120 units, can you go a little deeper dive into that? I just want to understand.
The desktops?
Yeah, we have 7 little desktops sitting around.
It's kind of a scattering of some old desktops in the district, particularly among the office staff, that they don't get refreshed as frequently. So it really began with the Applied Tech Lab at Hadley, because it's been at least 6 or 7 years since we refreshed those. So they're due to be refreshed, and that's about 30-35 computers in that room. So I figured, well, as long as we're going to be purchasing that, I'd probably get a little better price break. We go ahead and replace the desktops for the office. The office staff, the maintenance staff,
yeah, that's
some of the support staff within the building.
Let's slow up a little, if you don't mind, because the 35 I didn't know about. So the 35 is...
For the Applied Tech Lab.
For Applied Tech.
Right.
How old are the ones in the Applied Tech right now?
Those are at least 6 or 7 years.
Okay, so those are... And they get, we're going to go break what stuff in, say, usage. So they're utilized at a high rate.
Right, that's okay. That's what we're doing.
I just want to make sure. And so now we have 85 other units throughout 5 buildings, including this building?
Well, not really this building. I was
okay, so
more.
Including 5, including Hadley.
Right.
So I'm just having... So roughly, we're looking at 15 units, 617
per building. Right. Maybe a few more to Hadley because you've got a little bit more staff.
Okay. So these aren't, this isn't for teachers, though, because they're getting laptops since they're more mobile.
Correct.
Okay. I'm still struggling to get all the units. I'm sure they're there, but I want to make sure I can walk in a building and see those 17 units. So let's pull back. K through 5, let's say they're 14, and at Hadley they're 21.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, so you've got the office staff, the nurse, the custodians.
Custodians need laptops.
Yeah. No, desktops.
Desktops.
Yes. Custodians. All the custodians in the building.
One in. Yeah.
One in, so there's one. So when you say custodians, there's one for
Yeah,
one.
It's not like each custodian has their own.
I'm with you, because I'm up to five now. Right. I'm asking you to walk through me. I'm not trying to be
difficult.
I just see that number, and I was like, wow, that's a lot of desktops.
Well, we also have 160 coming off this, too. So.
Well, that's okay. I love that.
Yeah. And, yeah, we've also got monitoring stations for the cameras. I'm sure there's a few more I'm not thinking of right now, but I can get you a detailed list.
Yeah,
just, of the ones it seems we've been like assigned for.
Yeah, if we're using them, sure. Then we're using them, but I want to make sure, just because 160 are going off, you're replacing certain things with laptops.
Right.
Because that teachers are more mobile now, and I understand that. And that's when I went to the 120 number, and I'm like, I didn't have the 35.
Sure, I'll get you the exact.
Okay.
Exact people.
Thank you.
You weren't just going to warehouse them, like in a storage room?
I'm not suggesting that, but I want to make sure you can't cross-utilize them.
Because I know it's not Mike's decision, and I don't want to, bug him every time about, what's our plan for technology. But how do we want to address that, I guess, address that concern, the things that Kurt and I brought up as far as do we want one? As a district, are we going to have one-to-one technology for all of our grades, I guess, less maybe kindergarten if we don't do the iPad. Is that where we want to go as a district? Or has that decision been made? Should there be some discussion? Because I feel like Mike's just doing what's been presented to him to kind of go out and do. It's not as if Mike came up with the master plan. So I don't want to, it's not really...
So looking back,
for me, Stephanie, I'd really like to get the feedback that I asked for. I'd like the feedback from the kindergarten teachers is paramount in making a decision for me. And it may not be the same for everyone. I'm just saying from my perspective. So moving up to first grade, we keep moving up so we can understand how they're utilizing it.
Maybe that's question. Do we need to ask? Maybe we just need to ask. How much are you using it? Because, I think it's fair to say, I think for most of the teachers, it probably makes it a little easier if you have one-to-one technology, but is it necessary, and what does the usage in the classroom look like? So maybe that's what we really need to be finding out.
I agree, the usage, utilization.
For every grade level.
Because you might find the utilization, there's other ways to wrap your technology around it to be more efficient. So the usage question is the correct question. I don't think it's do you want it. I think it's the usage question, because then it becomes a formula of making sure they can have it when they need to utilize it. And that may be 3-to-1, because classrooms could, like we have been doing in the past. So I don't disagree with that. I think that's the information I'm seeking.
So not just the how are you using it, it's... How often are you using it on a daily basis within the classroom? Is that what I'm hearing?
It's like the snowblower, right?
It's both. It's how are you using it and how often are you using it.
So we have a savings. Let's pick on Dave.
He's like, I made it through here.
Just so Kurt wasn't here.
I did bring it up because he asked if we could clear the workplace rubber. I said if we had the Kubota,
it would have made it easy, right?
But I think that the higher level question, though, is what we're asking is, does K two need one-to-one technology? That's your first question, right?
Yeah, that's the thing. Mm-hmm.
I would say 3-2. I guess it could be three separate.
I think that's the question, but the one way for me to go about it is to know how you're utilizing it. That's all I say. I'm not saying that that's not the higher level question, but getting to it, because the answer could be a yes, but I don't know how you're using it, utilizing it, because you may be able to get, I mean, in a sense, one-to-one technology, I mean, it's a great term and all that, but doing things right, you can have one-to-one technology in a classroom for the period in which the classroom needed it. I mean, that's what we've been trying to do outside the map testing where everybody
is. Well, for me, though, I think it's a cart before the horse kind of question, because let's just say we just say no technology. We're not going to instill one-to-one. We're not going to use technology for K through 2. The program then changes, right, regardless of the utilization.
I don't know that we're saying, are we not going to use
technology? Right, right, but I think that's the question.
That's been asked and answered, I believe. So for me, it has. But if that's going back, that'd be going back a step from one-to-one.
Right. But that, I think that's what we're trying to get the evidence of, is the one-to-one.
Yeah, I can. I know. I agree with you. But for me, I don't know that we've seen, you know, and again, this has nothing to do with Mike, but even, you know, from Paul, it's not like we've seen, you know, for the last 6 months, we've been talked to as a board, hey, our teachers really are demanding this, you know, one-to-one technology. We have to have this, you know, because this is what our future programming needs are, and this is how we're going to do things. So for me, I haven't seen that. I haven't been told that. So that's why, you know, that's why for me I can almost make a determination as to where I was at with that, because it's just not, it's just, if
it's not on the radar.
Right. I mean, it's not like the K through 2 teachers are telling Karen and Paul, we have to have this, and they're bringing it forward. You would bring it forward to us, I know you would. So, you know, so that's why for me as a guy that's always accused of making staff do a lot of stuff and spend a lot of time and they can't do their job, do we really want to make a teacher in K through 2 fill out, you know, exactly what they're going to do every day, all day long, when we're in the middle of the school year?
No, I don't think that would be the right thing to ask. But I think that understand how to utilize them is important. But to figure out, not to do a daily log or, you know, sit there and say this is what I did between 8:30 and 9 and this is what I did, I think just getting the general scope of it would be important. So, I mean, you can have the grander thing, you know, philosophical discussion. You certainly can start there. But to me, if I'm having a philosophical discussion, I still want to know from the people who are using it, what do they feel, how are they using it, and is that the best way to do it? So that's where I'm at.
Well, we should have more information on that for the next board meeting, actually, prior to that.
Appreciate it.
So we'll get that from the K-1 teachers, and then I will work up those revised numbers. So kindergarten through second grade, just 10 per. You want to see third grade too, or just K-2?
Yeah, I'm okay with that too, Mike.
K-2?
Because Stephanie's probably going to ask that.
Okay. Oh, to go, do also. K-3?
K-3.
Also.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Oh, wait, also?
Yeah. I'll get that together for you.
So we'll do a K-2 and a K-3.
Well, it's just one thing that, you know, I had asked before, and this is, you know, we've seen some of it in the comments, the student comments. It's the Wi-Fi, and I know we have older buildings, and I know when you add this much technology searching for that Wi-Fi, I mean, you're going to get, that was my fear when I brought up the question. To me, I want to make sure that we don't give people the tools, you know, the resources, and then they can't use them. So, and I know you're looking into it, but it was just, it's something that was timely because, you know, students were talking about that. Or
particularly at Hadley, and that is something we're investigating right now at Hadley. And it's also, the next couple of years, we're going to be looking at that infrastructure.
But to me, I think it's good to...
networking.
And that's, right, that's actually coming, that lease is expiring, I think, next year. So we're only 1 year left with that wireless solution. I don't know that I recommend getting rid of it right away, but we might have a couple of years before we might look at a different or a bigger wireless solution for that.
Well, I don't want to enhance something at a cost, enhance it, and then, in essence, replace it either. I know you got to balance that when you're doing it. But at the end of the day, for me, if you have it, it's important that you can use it, not when when the Wi-Fi, when everybody's down with the usage level, but when you need to use it. We have to have the ability to do that. Otherwise, all the discussion we just had is lost because we're not utilizing the tool that we're sitting there discussing for the resource, you know, the computer. So to me, that's, I just want to make sure, I brought it up last time, mm-hmm. I just want to, I'll probably continue to bring it up, Mike, so it's important to me.
I have another question. I mean, in rough calculations, I could be wrong about this, but I'm assuming based from the numbers we have here, if you were to reevaluate the one-to-one for second and third grade, it's like 400 per month, I think, about right. 400.
I have to check.
So sure. That may not be accurate, but the one question is, you know, for the numbers that we're looking to lease, is the cost impacted at all by that? Is there a time?
It would have to go down pretty significantly. I wouldn't think so, but the quantity would have to go down fairly significant. But I'd have to check to see exactly how much we'd be reducing.
Well, and if there's like a certain time that a decision has to be made, I mean, just things for us to know. Mm-hmm.
Well, the timeline is pretty tight, mm-hmm. you know, at this time of year. So this is the finance portion, and we'll go to discussion at the next board meeting, and then for action after that. By then, we're getting into April. So by then, we have to be able to make the purchase, be able to make sure we can get the equipment in time, and then, of course, do all the work it's going to take to deploy them in the summer. So we're kind of at that point right now. Mm-hmm.
So you're thinking April is where you'd like that make
yeah, that would
right. We'd like that be approval to go ahead. And then just real quickly, I just wanted to highlight a couple things on the overall budget. There's a jump on that top network services line. That is where I plan to fund the insurance for the Chromebooks at Hadley. So that's why you're going to see a little bit of a jump on that particular number. Here are the leases.
What is that, Mike, again?
It's professional services for them. It's the very top $70,000.
Yeah.
Right. So that will cover our insurance costs at Hadley. The other thing is the lease numbers. So we're going to go down from $920,000 annually to what I recommended at the high end for, $735,000 annually. Printer toner stays about the same. The other would be software. So we'll see a reduction in our software costs this year because it gave us an opportunity with the digital literacy specialist to kind of review a lot of the software we've been using, especially since we're going away from the Microsoft platform to the Google platform. There was a lot of licensing we could kind of sweep away that we didn't need. Or even things like McAfee or antivirus, which you don't need with the Chromebook. So I just wanted to highlight those couple areas for some reductions and increase.
We have to have insurance also for the elementary school.
I wasn't going to do it this year. I was going to kind of evaluate through next year. We haven't historically had a lot of damage at the grade schools since they are sort of just in that classroom and they're supervised the whole time where kids that have there are constantly moving and they're taking them home now. So we haven't really seen as much damage there, but at Hadley, we continue to have a problem.
Yeah, because in the classrooms in the grade schools, they're even locked up at night. Yeah.
It's a lot more concerning. Okay,
good.
Any questions? Thank you.
So we'll move this to discussion at the next board meeting.
Please.
So we'll have the information the board requested, the K-2, the K-3 data on what it would look like finance-wise, and then we'll also bring the teacher feedback around that utilization and how are they using it. Does that sound fair to everybody?
Like, at least in my mind, for the utilization, I don't think it has to be really complicated.
Okay.
It could be as simple as how often do you use it? Every day, every other day.
Okay, so we're not talking
once
hours.
A month, and then you could say how many hours, you know, when you use it, how many hours. You know, I do think you need to have hours captured in that somehow, but I don't think we have to get detailed, like, what are you using?
Just real broad.
You know, how many, average, how many hours a day?
By
is that comfortable for everybody?
I mean, if they say
because
that,
I think that
20%,
you're right. If we can make this easy, they'll fill it out and they'll get it back to us in a time. Because the last thing anybody wants to do,
I know. And they're, you know.
Like I think how many like hours a day and then how many days a week.
Yep.
Maybe they use it an hour at a time, but only 3 days a week. Mm-hmm. Something.
Something that we can do fairly easy.
Do
by grade level.
Get it down. Be fairly quick for them to fill out.
So we'll have that for you March 21st for the discussion. And then Mike will have the different options.
Mike, right. We went down $195,000 in
Capital equipment, right, because that was accounting for the new spaces of the buildings, so infrastructure equipment, any additional wireless that we needed. So we built a little bit more into that budget over the last year, but this coming year I wouldn't see us having nearly as much expenses on that.
Okay. Now we, Lori's got some information for us around staffing, so we'll... the subject continues, so we'll hand it off to Lori. Are we doing PowerPoint?
It should be under Google. It is. Well, it is tomorrow.
Yeah, it wasn't. Yeah, she's been going.
Well, Mike's getting it started. He has the slides in front of you, so we can get started. So we are continuing our discussion in terms of staffing. We'd ask for more information about the different areas of staffing. Last time we talked about general ed staffing at the elementary and at the junior high level. And today we're going to talk a little bit about ESL bilingual, and then I also threw in Title I. So depending on time, hopefully we'll be able to get that in there. Great. So as we start, probably the first thing we would want to just talk about briefly to begin with is the programming that's required by law. And so in Illinois School Code, we need to provide either a transitional program of instruction or a transitional bilingual education program for students. And it depends on the languages that are spoken, the number of students that are involved. So the first piece I just want to highlight real quickly is TPI, which is that transitional program of instruction. And that's when an attendance center has an enrollment of 19 or fewer English language learners of any single language other than English. Okay? So the requirements of that TPI program is that native language support in the home language be offered to the extent necessary. And this is where we typically have kids with several different languages in the same, in the same ESL program who need services. So the code requires that they have instruction in ESL, and it may also include, but isn't limited to, language arts instruction in the home language and instruction in the history and culture of the country which is native to the students and their parents. Am I up at the time for them? No. Great. Okay, so that's good. So then next, the other type of programming that the law requires, and then again, the number of students that are speaking a particular language is what's called TBE, or the transitional program, bilingual education. And those are divided into, you can have a full-time TBE student or a part-time TBE student, which we'll get to in a couple minutes. Applies to grades K through 12. And again, it's when an attendance center or school has an enrollment of 20 or more English language learners of the same language classification. And that's kind of a critical piece in here. The school district must establish a TBE program for each language classification represented by the languages. So we currently, I'll get to this in a couple minutes, offer this TBE full-time for Vietnamese, Urdu, and Spanish. And I'll talk a little bit more about this when we get to the staffing model, where Vietnamese and Urdu don't have enough students for grade level to have a self-contained program for that. For example, it might be sprinkled where there's 3 kids in second grade, 6 kids in third grade, 7 kids in fourth grade, and so on. So there aren't 20 at first grade altogether, or close to 20 altogether. So requirements for the TBE program is instruction and basically the subjects that are required by law in the districts for instruction. And then also instruction in the history and culture of the country or territory which is native to the students. This is just a visual of the TBE versus the TPI. I like visuals, they help me. So I thought that would be a nice slide to kind of throw in there. And I need to give credit to Katie McCluskey, who assisted me with this program piece of it. She was planning to be here this evening, but is not feeling very well. So she is not here this evening. But so you can see here with the TBE, again, 20 or more ELLs from the same language, maybe offered to fewer than 20 ELLs, and includes ESL instruction in English and in the home language in the core academic subjects. Whereas the TPI has 19 or fewer ELLs from the same country, and then it's ESL is provided in native language support as needed. So then when you get to that TBE, that Transitional Bilingual Education, there's full-time and part-time criteria for that. So in order to be full-time in a program, a self-contained program, we offer our TBE programming through the dual language program in Spanish. You need to have a language proficiency level of 3.5 or higher to 3.49 or lower to be in the full-time program, and 3.5 or higher to be in the part-time program. And again, the language proficiency is based on access testing, which is done in the spring, the winter each year. We get our results typically in May. For our new kindergartners, it's done with what's called the model test, and that's kindergartners first semester. So the scores on that determine if the child is full-time or part-time. So what does it look like here in District 41? What do we do with all of our five schools? So at Forest Glen, we have a TPI program and a part-time TBE program. But the part-time TBE is Spanish-speaking students. Same is true for Franklin, same is true for Lincoln. So these three schools have very similar programming for the students. At Hadley, we have TBE full-time. There are very few number of students, not enough to offer a self-contained section. We do have that part-time TBE, and then we also have TPI. And most of our students at Hadley are the part-time TBE and the TPI. At Churchill is where it's a little bit different. We have the transitional bilingual instruction full-time in Spanish, and again, that's offered through our dual language program. We also have TBE full-time in Vietnamese and Urdu because we have 20, around 20 Vietnamese, around 20 Urdu speakers at Churchill, but again, they're not all at the same grade level, so it's not enough to offer a self-contained section. So those students are serviced through an ESL teacher who's fluent in Vietnamese and supported with an aide who is fluent in Urdu. And then we also have the TPI program there. So what does this mean in terms of what the kids receive instruction-wise? If they are TBE part-time or TPI, they get a minimum of 30 minutes of ESL instruction on a daily basis provided by a properly licensed teacher, and students at the lower proficiency level, so the closer they get to that, that 3.5 or 4, more services are offered, and then bilingual services for the TBE full-time for the dual language program, and again, the students that fit the criteria for full-time are transported to Churchill for the services they need. So if there's a student at one of our other schools who needs the TBE full-time in Spanish, we bring them over to Churchill. So, the staffing chart, what does that look like for staffing? So, what I wanted to put up here was kind of a comparison between 15-16 and 16-17. Now, this is 15-16, and these are fairly current numbers. These are not from the start of the school year. And so you can see at Forest Glen, we have 35 students who are in the program. We have one staff member right now. And I just put a ratio where we just divided these two columns to give you an idea of student-to-staff ratio. So I highlighted this Churchill number here at 3.5 because that's an area where last year we had four ESL teachers. We did bring it down to 3.5. We had a teacher who left. We reduced to halftime. We felt we could accommodate it. And more students moved in, and we're feeling like we really need that FTE back for next year. When we're looking at next year, we added some also FTE to Forest Glen because of pre-K testing and eval turn EC, our early childhood that involve ESL students. And then you can see the Franklin numbers have jumped also. So these are our current staffing levels right here, and this is what we're proposing for next year. And again, I just put on the side the different programs that are present, just in case you.
I had a question that I had. Right. Two. The second one is the
for the, oh, I know, the students that are listed on here, these are just ones that qualify based on their access scores. It's not the number of students necessarily that it's their native language. Like, they may be proficient enough in English that they don't need...
They don't require services.
Require services, correct. Okay.
Correct. So these are the ones, and this does not include any pre-K numbers.
Okay.
So this is just K-5.
Okay.
Because otherwise, 4-7 would have far larger numbers than what you're seeing right here.
And then, so for, you know, I guess we can just use, like, Lincoln as an example.
Sure.
How many native languages are we talking that are at each of the schools that, you know, qualifying here? Like, at Forest Glen, there's 35 students and there's one staff. I'm just out of curiosity, how many different...
I don't know that.
Or is the staff, when the staff is working with the students, they're working with the group that has the same native language?
Typically, it's a variety of languages. And Katie and her staff track the languages, and if she were here, she'd probably be able to rattle that off right away. I can find out for you and let you know, the number of languages at each of the schools. But
I was reminded,
it's a variety of...
Okay.
A variety of languages.
It's a variety.
Right. Okay. Right. And that's typically what the TPI is. Kind of a critical mass of one
language in each state. Can you talk me through a little? So it looks like some of these are set by federal and state guidelines. Is that?
Well, what they do is they recommend, what they're saying is you need to provide this amount of services, so like the 30 minutes a day and plus the instruction. Where it gets tricky and where it becomes difficult and it's not as cut and dry as a class size target is that you've got to schedule around how to get the kids together at the right time so that they can be provided those services. Mm-hmm. So that's where it's with ESL staffing, again, it's not as neat, I guess you could say. Not that class size targets are neat because we know they go above and below. But you really have to look at how we're scheduling the kids and when we can pull them together, because you don't want to be pulling them out of necessarily core content where they're getting the good examples from the students in English, but want to make sure that you're providing what they need.
But the TPI and the TBE, those are guidelines. Are they state guidelines?
I believe they're federal. No, they're state. They're from the Illinois School Code.
And then with those guidelines, do we get any help? I mean, I know we get state funding. How do we get help from the state, or do we get help from the state for these guidelines?
We do get that, and here I'm going to talk generally because I don't have all of the details. We do get help from the state. Maybe Becky can help me a little bit too, from the state grants. We do get some from a federal grant from Title III. I know that Katie has written the salaries of many of these staff into those grants because we can use the money for that.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the way I know that is because Title I last year, I had a few positions that supported the ESL and bilingual programs in Title I, and she said I have money in Title III, and she took those positions over and put them in the grants. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So there is quite some support. I can't tell you precisely how much. I can find out for you if you'd like to know that.
I vaguely remember. I mean, looking at the budget last year, I think it shows some of the.
Yeah, she's got quite a few of the positions in there, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
But I can find out. Is anybody have other questions about the languages for you?
Yeah, and I was just wondering.
I'm curious too. I was getting ready to present this. I didn't show you that.
The staffing levels, if it's like 1.8, or do we round up? Are we sharing staff amongst buildings?
Well, in this particular case, for example, one of our teachers at Lincoln goes over and spends an hour a day over at Franklin picking up a group, because those numbers at Franklin really went up since the start of the school year. And then the Lincoln ones, are fairly stable. We have plenty of staff there. So you can see for next year, we're projecting shifting some of this to try and even things out and even the load out a little bit more. But that halftime that we had reduced here, we feel we need that, and then we feel actually we need another halftime again to kind of keep these more in a similar ballpark. A lot of it's going to depend on the scheduling. So, and it's not the schedule like our elementary schedule, which I know might be a question. It's not about that. It's about when you can pull the kids and get them their services. So with that, we have some. Let me go back to the presentation. I'm sorry. Are there any more questions? So these are kind of the implications for staffing, and I kind of already talked ahead of this a little bit. Language levels, numbers of students, access results. We usually take our current students' levels and program based on that because we're not getting those access scores until well after the fact. Like I said, scheduling is very important. Same is true for the bilingual instruction, kind of TVE programming, again, required because of the numbers to provide the Vietnamese and Urdu also. And our Spanish full-time TVE services are provided through the dual language program. And so our staffing projections include an additional full-time equivalent teacher for 16-17. Again, it'll be spread among the elementary schools to kind of even that out. Our timeline, like we do with the class size targets, we staff and we post conservatively. We use our finance system, work closely with Becky and the budget. And then we build in, and this is through the contingency piece, some additional FTE that's part of those positions that we have kind of held aside in the event that enrollment goes up and numbers pop, and that's when we would come back to you, the board, and say we need additional FTE, kind of like we did mid-year with special education when we needed some more staffing because of the numbers and the needs at the time. So that's kind of it on the ESL and bilingual piece. I'm going to stop for a minute before I go on to Title I.
I have another question.
Go ahead.
This is just classroom teachers, not aides.
I didn't want to work with the
instructional. Okay, so that's include aides. And then, so for like, at Churchill, just looking at the staffing level, mm-hmm. but for bilingual, I know we have more teachers than that, but does one of the teacher count as not? Do you understand? I don't know.
Are you talking about like in our dual language
yeah,
program?
Yeah, or in the dual language program.
Right.
Sorry,
so basically what we've done is that program is filled up as we've taken the bilingual teacher and they've flipped over to become a dual language teacher.
Okay.
So we had a kindergarten bilingual teacher. We had a first grade self-contained bilingual teacher. We had a second grade self-contained bilingual teacher. This year, right now, as we stand here today, we have a third grade self-contained bilingual teacher. So next year, she will be the Spanish dual teacher, and then there'll be English kids and an English ESL teacher who's her partner. But what it's done is, like, say for example that third grade number is smaller. There's 14 Spanish-speaking students in that ESL classroom. When you bring dual in, you've got, you know, some Spanish and some English. You can even up and make those classes a little bit larger, where like it's 20 and 20, and that kind of helps a little in terms of moving things over. It also provides the opportunity for our English-speaking kids to learn Spanish. So it isn't necessarily, it's really like a no trade from that standpoint. We're just switching over who's teaching what's going, you know. Programmatically very different, but staffing-wise, it's the same. Does that make sense? On the dual.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Well, that makes sense. It's, so all the dual language teachers aren't on here. Just
they're not. It's just.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. So I was trying to carve it out. So
yeah.
You
it's a big program.
Right. Yeah. That makes sense. Other questions?
You good with that?
Okay. Title I is quick. Blind based on it. So as you probably know, and as you, learned earlier in the year when we were talking about Title I, when Paula sent you information about Title I staffing, it is a federal grant. It is part, actually, of the original Elementary and Secondary Education Act, and it's designed to provide funding based on poverty level to schools and to kind of even the playing field for what they would be considered to be at-risk schools. So Churchill is our Title I school here within the district. And here, the official purpose of Title I is to ensure that all children have a fair, equal, and significant opportunity to obtain a high-quality education and reach at minimum proficiency on challenging state academic achievement standards and state academic assessments. So the funding rate with Title I is based on your free reduced lunch counts and your numbers. And the programming has to be used on your most at-risk academic students. So what we're looking at for Title I, we typically get our grant allocation in May or June with a final allocation in December. We always have to amend the grant in November and December as the final budget comes through. But we're projecting for next year for 16-17 for our use of Title I funding. Again, these are at Churchill, and it has to be used to supplement instead of supplant programming there. So we can't use it to pay for something we already have in place. We have to use it for something different that's going to help make a difference in the performance at Churchill. So we are planning and hoping to continue our extended day teacher full-time, again, paid for with Title I. That kindergarten teacher that picks up our 34 most at-risk kids and keeps them for the other half of the school day. We are hoping to continue to have a half-time teacher who will work with students with small groups on interventions. We've had that for 2 years, again, funded through Title I money. We've provided after-school stipends for Living Together, which is a tutoring program at Churchill. We hope to continue to that, and then we've also used it to pay for an instructional aid in that extended day program again to help hopefully bring those kids up to grade level. And just to note, in 15-16, we funded all of this, plus we had some a significant amount of carryover money, so we were able to fund 4 instructional aids that we won't be able to fund with next year's allocation of title money. But again, this is all federal money. And we write both salary and benefits in there.
How many aides was that? Lori, I didn't catch that.
This
from this year to next year that we won't be able to fund.
4. 4 instructional aides. You've seen them coming through the personnel report actually recently.
Okay.
Because that was that extra amount of money that then came through in December. We honestly had to figure out how to spend or lose the deal. So it may even come back next December as final budgets come through. We may get more money and may be able to put some more in there. But
okay. Any other questions on Title I?
The board packet too.
Yeah.
I thought that was helpful. But
well, I'm sorry. I was like, no.
I told them.
It's
really good.
It's a good description.
I'd be happy to share any of this with you.
Yeah, we'll link that.
And then we'll keep moving down to the other areas because I know we still want information about special education staffing and some of the others. So hopefully with time we can kind of whittle away at this. That's okay.
All right, Lori. Thank you so much. We will, in the Finance Committee, we'll have a 9-minute break, and then we'll start the hearing. Thank you.